This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland at the end of the year. We're wishing you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year with this terrific Dreamland special event. Get set for something really extraordinary. The special will run over the next 2 weeks, and then we begin again. The new year will be upon us. What adventures await? This is Whitley Strieber, and welcome to our Christmas New Year's Dreamland. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. We've got an incredible group here. An old friend of Dreamland and of Whitley Strieber, Amy Luchansky, is with us. Stephen Leah, Scott Roeder, and John. John is not John. John is somebody else. We're going to be discussing a remarkable set of experiences that John has had that includes a video that was made aboard a UFO that we are pretty sure is real. And we've got some experts here to discuss that very issue. Later in the show, we will run that video and you can observe it. And I have to tell you, if it's not the real deal, I'd be very surprised. I think we do have here a video taken by an abductee inside a UFO. And I will also discuss to a degree what I understand about what we are seeing when we actually look at the video. But let's get started. John, I want to welcome you to the show. But before we go to you, I want to ask Amy, Scott, and Stephen, each in turn, to tell why you're here and what you do in this field. Amy, why don't you lead off?
As you mentioned, I am a longtime Dreamland person. I'm actually good friends with John. And John, at the time that this video was taken, lived literally down the street from me. We live on a tiny little island, Key West. I think I'm the first person that saw the video, and I certainly saw how shaken up John was when he discovered it on his phone about 6 months after it had actually been taken. He had no idea it was there. And so I, of course, reached out to you because knowing John and his history, there was something there. And
right. Amy has been a part of the Dreamland family from the beginning. I mean, virtually along. You've been to the Dreamland festivals.
I was a child, really. Yeah,
absolutely. All right, Scott, can you give us your input?
Yeah, sure. My name is Scott Roeder. I own a company called Evidence Room, based out of Cleveland, Ohio. We work internationally as crime and shooting scene reconstruction experts. I am an expert witness. I testify at murder cases, police involved shooting cases, and any other kind of litigation that calls for my expert testimony. And I also provide forensic computer animations of my shooting and crime scene reconstructions. I was contacted by John after he saw my reconstruction of the alien backyard visitation case in Las Vegas, Nevada, May 1st, 2023. And he was impressed with the work that I had done on that case. And he asked me to analyze his video of this event, which I've done.
And we will get to that over the course of the show for sure. Stephen, should I call you Steve or Stephen?
Stephen.
Okay, Stephen, let's hear from you and what you're here about.
My name is Stephen Leah. I'm a quantum imaging developer. I have a company, and John had reached out to us to, he had been through several others and was quite frustrated with the progress on it. And before he had come to Scott, asked me to take a look at it. And we ran it through our process. And my goal, my target was to see if any underlying hard-coded, what we call discrete signal data sets within that imagery. And our process is arbitrary. It does not have any lines of code or any kind of way to say, well, this is fake or this is real. What it does is it can decipher and extract hard-coded quantum signatures, and no one can fake that. And he had it. His whole entire, we extracted, there's 1,200 and something frames in that, and every single frame was pristine. And the signatures that we resolved out of that did align and correlate with what he was claiming to have happened to him. And some of the resolves were quite disturbing, to be honest. And so that's what we bring to the table.
We will get into that in over the course of this show. I think this is probably one of the most amazing shows I've ever done, I have to tell you. And I'm so glad that it's here. You know, we are the loose cannon part of disclosure here on Dreamland and other places in the internet. That I'm not the only one, obviously. But I like being a loose cannon. That's what I was hired to do. I wasn't hired by anyone who has any money in their pockets, though, because the visitors don't pay. Hired me. Okay, John. When did this first start in your life? When did this first come into your life?
Hi, Willie. Thanks for having me, and thanks to Amy for her support and Stephen and Scott for their work. I am a lifelong abductee. My first memory goes back to, I believe, 6 or 7 years old, when I had a certain daydream and night dream that throughout my teen years and young adult years had come back to me. I never was really able to put two and two together until years later, and many different both conscious and other evidentiary type things to lead me to believe that there were many abductions throughout my life. Eventually, and I'm skipping over everything, but eventually about 20, I think it was about 26, 27 years ago, I wrote a 6-page letter to Bud Hopkins. And I had noted a number of abductions and scenarios, and Bud had called me immediately and said, you know, I get hundreds of letters every month from people all over the world, and there's certain things within the abduction field that we kind of hold back from the public so that when people come forward, it gives us something to measure their stories against. And you've pretty much touched upon everything. And at the time, I lived not far outside of New York City in the suburbs. And Bud asked me to come in, and was I willing to try regression therapy? And I was. A couple of years prior, I had successfully tried past life regression. So Bud and I, with others present, had three very successful regression sessions. And one of them, which was from that first time when I was 6 or 7, we recovered memories and were able to take what was a dream that ended, or daydream too, at a certain point, and able to move on with it. And, you know, there were certain things that were in it that, you know, said it was an abduction, you know, where there was a gray present, and even one of my neighbors was part of the abduction. And when my memory of her was being in a nightgown in a comatose state, being abducted along with me, and she lived just two doors over, and she was about 3-4 years older than me at the time. Well, still 3-4 years older than me. So, you know, I've only throughout all my abductions, and believe me, I have incredible stories and physical evidence and other friends and family, well, other people who have experienced things, but nothing. And I was never one to talk about my stuff publicly, but, you know, just with an inner circle, and, you know, who wants to be laughed at. And I was living in Key West, and Amy was my friend. And one day, sitting on my back porch, I was going through the gallery of my camera, deleting old pictures and videos like most of us do at some point. And I get to June 12th of 2021, and I deleted, I believe, two pictures, and I see a video there, and from just the screenshot, I couldn't tell what the video was, and I watched it, and it was a little dark and a little blurry and a little pixelated, and but the thing was, on the 43-second video, you can clearly hear my voice make four comments.
I want to get into that a little bit down the road. What I want to do now is to go back to Amy. Amy, you were living literally down the road from John when this event took place. Do you have, first, let's hear, you're literally also a lifelong experiencer, and you've been with part of Dreamland from the very beginning, part of Unknown Country. Can you tell us a little bit about your own background?
So I think, like a lot of people, I was 17 or 18 when Communion came out, and I was drawn to the book. I didn't really know why. I was reading it, and it was like the most shocking thing that I had ever read. But also, as I turned the page, I'd be like, well, of course, that's what happened next, which was such a weird position to be in, because I'm reading something that's so shocking, and I've never encountered any material like this before. And yet, as I'm reading it, I'm also like, yeah, that's what happened next. So I've sort of had that in my background. I don't have the conscious memories that a lot of people do. I've never been regressed. I have seen craft several times in the sky, including a time that was investigated by MUFON, and also had about 45 minutes of missing time associated with it. So I definitely know there's something out there. You know, like you, I don't say that they're aliens from, you know, reticuli. We don't know where they're from, which is very frustrating. To 40 years later, we still don't know where they're from. But I know that there's something to it. And
yeah,
I, you know,
as far as I'm concerned, they come out of the closet.
Yeah, I of my closet as a child. Which a lot of things in my background make sense when you look at it through a visitor perspective, things that I didn't understand when I was a child. And then as an adult, you look back and go, well, there's, you know, a thread connecting it.
You know, the purpose of communion, which I hasten to add, I did not know at the time. I probably couldn't have written the book if I knew what it actually was, which was a book that was designed to initiate contact by enabling people to remember an experience so shocking that they had amnesia about it.
Yeah.
And it was intentionally designed by the visitors that way, including the face behind us, which if you look, folks, you can see her in between the picture of Anne and the beautiful crop circle sent to me by a friend in England. There she is, the original portrait. That face was intended to elicit memory. I had no idea that I was initiating contact by publishing the book. If I had known that, I probably would still be sitting at the typewriter with my fingers frozen like this.
Face down.
Anyway, that's what happened. And, you know, we the people have ended up doing this, and the government's running along behind us saying, wait a minute, we've got another way of confusing you here. Just hold on. We're going to confuse you again if we can. And here, let's get the laugh track going, as they have to come to face their own shock that they're not in control. They never have been. It's us and it's those people. That's who controls this and nobody else. Mm-hmm. My whole life and why you guys are here and why I do this every week is the same thing, to reduce the effect of the shock that Amy experienced, that I experienced, that John experienced. Have either of you guys had any experiences like this, Scott and Stephen?
Yeah, I have not. I've lived a very interesting life, but without any phenomena, as we might say. I've been engaged in, you know, dealing with homicide investigations from almost the age of 18 when I got into this business. So I've been overwhelmed with the unhappy jubilation of the human condition and its propensity for annihilation for all my life. And it was only recently that I turned my attention to the unexplained phenomenon, which we're talking about today, by way of my friend Ross Coulthart, who I know in Australia from doing crime shows with him. And then he all of a sudden got, he changed his whole thing from being a crime investigator, where is how I knew him. We did a bunch of TV shows on unexplained murders. And then he turns it, now he's doing all UFOs and all this stuff, the whole threat narrative.
Ross got chosen.
He got chosen. Yeah, someone he was chosen.
You can't see chosen the same way they chose me and so many others.
Right. So that's great, how I kind of got.
Ross is really good at what he does. He's a fabulous choice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, he's a great broadcaster. He has an appeal to a large swath of people. He's a good writer. And he's coming at it kind of how I came at it with the crime scene. I'm trying to keep my principles of evidence review and how I work on any murder case into these kinds of situations. That's what I did on the Las Vegas case with the Kenmore Gomez family. And the evidence is the evidence. And I don't try to include my personal opinion or my feelings. I don't have any experiences in it other than I've been a consumer of this information through UFOtainment, I guess I would say. But I think the thing that I want to say is I'm not trying to become a beacon to draw in an attention or an experience, because even though I know they're there, I don't know if I need a face-to-face meeting.
Well, yeah, we're probably better off with you having the objective, the distance of the objective observer.
Yes.
And speaking of objective observers, folks, this is a backhanded lead into our first break. But before the break, I want to talk to you just a little bit about The Fourth Mind. The Fourth Mind is available at this point in Kindle on Amazon.com. It will be available in hardcover, softcover, and as an audiobook over the course of the month of January. But right now, and I do think you should get it and read it. I think you should read it. I think you should probably listen to it as well to get some of the emotional timber of it. It is the next step in terms of contact. My purpose in it is to demystify the visitors. It gets into their physical bodies. It gets into their beliefs. It gets into their genetics, the genetics of the hybrids, and it gets into their powers of body and mind and why we don't have them, but once did, and why we lost them and how we can regain them. This is a fundamentally important book, and I'm just going to be very frank. You got to do this, because I've worked. This is the second book. If Communion was the first book, this is the second, and maybe the last, because I think after this, perhaps comes contact. Its purpose is to reduce what's called ontological shock, which is the shock of the change of your paradigm, and it will help us all. Okay, that said, we'll be right back.
What I saw that night, I can never forget it.
There was a connected feeling as if it could read my mind. So I waved up at it.
I just remember after that experience, I felt like my life was supposed to be lived a certain way, that effectively I was given a second chance.
People don't just experience it in flight. There are other experiences that they're not even reporting.
There's an extraordinary conversation going on about UFOs and technology and weapons, but not the experience, not the actual experience of being face to face with this.
I think when somebody sees a UFO or has an experience of one, it kind of forces you to confront what your belief systems are, how you feel about things, how you feel about other people, your place in the world, and how big or small it is.
A lot of the stigma that surrounds this subject has to do with the manufactured campaign, an institutionalized campaign to keep people from talking about it, especially scientists.
If you're confused and you're lost, it's because the people who do this are great at their jobs. They've been perfecting this for decades. They're not craftsmen of disinformation. They're artists.
The fact that we're not alone in the universe, it's paradigm shifting. It's huge. It could be the biggest story in human history. So why aren't more people talking about this?
We don't need to wait around for the government to give us the answers. The UFO phenomenon is part of our reality. It's not something that the government can lock up in an underground bunker somewhere and keep from us. It's everywhere, and it's happening all the time.
If you look at the history of humans, you're going to see that it's a history of engagement with non-human intelligence, because a lot of people believe in non-human intelligence.
I think it's very difficult to talk about the strange stuff, precisely because it's so strange. We're living in a little corner of the world, just a little corner of it that we call reality. We need to turn off the lights, open the door, and walk out of this little house we live in. And then we're going to start to see something real.
We're talking to Amy Lubchansky, Stephen Leah, Scott Roeder, and John about basically the close encounter experience, John's own experiences. Amy, who lived down the street from him, is a longtime Dreamlander. Stephen and Scott both bring different forms of expertise to this show, and we are moving toward a point at which we will show the video that John took. But before we do that, John, I'd like to come back to you and talk a little bit about that video and about your experiences. And let's now get to go down to Key West. Amy, before we start with John, have you had any experiences in the same general time frame, I mean, same year or so, that John did while you were on Key West?
Yeah, we actually did. So when John found the video, it was December of 2021. And it was, the timestamp was in June. And so we kind of frantically, because John and I went out all the time, had dinner, went to movies, went to any of Key West's many bars. So did we go out that night? What happened that night? Did we see each other? And we're looking through our bank accounts. Did we spend money at this place, that place, trying to recreate, you know, what happened that evening? We did not see each other that evening. We were able to find out. But I did have a rather significant sighting within that time period. I don't know the exact day, but I do know it was that week. And I know because I had texted somebody about it, that I was walking home in Key West late at night and I saw a very strange light in the sky. I saw it when I got home. I watched it on my patio for like 20 minutes. It didn't move. Went to bed, woke up in the morning, and my partner said, hey, I woke up in the middle of the night and our bedroom was filled with a bright blue light and the bed was shaking. And I said, why didn't you wake me up and tell me? And he said, well, I couldn't, but I'm telling you now. And that was within the same week as John had his experience.
So this was happening. Were there any, did you look for any reports of UFOs in the area?
I have done some Google searches and have not found anything. And okay. We all spoke last week about should John report this to MUFON, even though it's been so much later. I do find one thing that's really helpful about MUFON is they can let you know what, on that same day, somebody 20 miles away from you saw something similar.
Actually, I just found something, Amy, as you were talking. According to ABC KMIZ 17, Fox 22, in Sanibel, Florida, on June 17th, the day after 2021, it was reported that a unidentified floating object was seen. But it says the mystery, of course, was solved and debunked. It was a couple of things passing each other on the ocean and over Marco Island, and it gave just the perception of something in the sky. Of course, there's always a terrestrial explanation for all of these things. So easily debunked with just a surfaceal check, which is usually how they get debunked, which is armchair quarterbacking without any expertise, and people just pontificate on what it could be rather than doing what people should do, which is look at the witness statements, check, verify for any uninterested cross-referenced material. Like I just did, we have a UFO reporting the day after in Sanibel. So we know if these UFOs can go here to there like that. So I don't think distance is a consideration at all with regard to, we have one in the proximity right here that reported the day after. So I think that's interesting.
Important to note too, that Key West also has a naval base. That's like a very important significance to national security. It's actually the Top Gun place. It's a naval flight, naval pilot.
You got to play Fidel Castro right there, a couple of miles off the shore.
Drones flying all over these sensitive installations. Yeah. Half of Key West is a naval base.
That I did not know.
Yeah. Dating way back, for some reason, the skies over Key West are considered one of the best places to do aerial like games.
Yeah. And the home of Ernest Hemingway and the sunken city of Atlantis.
Yeah, it's Key West is certainly an interesting place. John, let's get back to you now. You were, when we left you a few minutes ago, you were just beginning to talk about that week. And can you tell us, well, let's do this. And I want to get in, you haven't actually described any of your remembered abduction experiences. You mentioned being hypnotized by Bud, but not what these experiences were. Can you try to tell us a little? And I know this is not easy. I've been asked to do this many times myself, and it's surprisingly difficult. You think, you know, I remember my experience, of course, and then you try to talk about it, and it's not so easy. But let's try this. Can you try to look back in your mind and see if you can remember something of what you said to Bud and what you talked about under hypnosis? You've heard the tapes, I'm sure, and give us a flavor of your close encounter life by telling us a story of one of your experiences.
Sure, that's easy. And
I say it's hard, and then you say it's easy. Great, that's
easy. Easy because I've recounted it many times, and I'll tell you that Bud had told me that of all the hundreds and hundreds of people that he had sat with and done regression sessions with, he said that he thought I probably handled it better than anyone he ever met. That it, you know, almost like it rolled off of me like Teflon. And as crazy and as frightening as some of the experiences have been, I feel that I'm essentially none the worse for wear. You know, I'm still me, you know, and even though they've done things without permission and done things that would end someone else up in jail, probably, you know, I just go on about my life.
Now, wait a minute here. You're doing what we, all of us abductees, do. I asked you to describe the experience, and you're talking around it very, very carefully.
No, I'm going to go right into it.
Okay,
right into it. One time, March of 1994, I was living in the Hudson Valley in New York, and went over to my good buddy's house, and it was somewhat rural, and he had 1 acre cut out of the back of his house, very nice backyard, and I'm going to do my best to keep the story as short as possible.
No, you don't have to keep it short. Go ahead and tell the story.
Okay, so his wife was away on business, and it was before we had kids, and I went over his house, and we had 2 beers, and it was a little after 11 p.m., and I went out to the back porch to urinate off the back porch, and it was very dark out there. It was March, and there were no leaves on the trees. So as I'm standing there doing my thing off the back porch, I see through some trees, and it is wooded behind his house, this big light. And I'm done doing my thing, and I moved a little so I have a better view of it. And now I see this huge orange light through the trees. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, this is like a UFO in the woods. And I call out to my friend, get out here, get out here. And of all my friends, he was the only other one that ever had a close encounter that he would talk about. And he comes out and he's like, what is that? What is that? I think it's a UFO. And after about a minute, he runs back in the house and he comes out, not with a camera, but with binoculars. And so we figured the object was about the length of a football field, about 300 feet away.
Wow.
And it was in a clearing, which ultimately turned out to be the backyard of another home. From the back of his yard through maybe 25 feet of trees, then there was another clearing, which was the backyard of another home. So we're looking at this object. First, he looks through the binoculars, and I look. He looks. I take it back, the binoculars, for a second time, and this orange glowing object lit up the area all around it. And I pan the binoculars slightly to the left, and I see a gray standing there, profiled to us, kind of facing the craft. It had the typical big grayish head. And the first thing I thought of when I was looking at it looked like dolphin skin. And its arms, its body, its legs were really, really thin and spindly. And the arms, the hands, were the only other thing that were white. He looked like he was wearing a scuba outfit, an all black tight outfit. And the hands were almost touching the ground. And I just saw the one. It was standing profile to us. I was able to see the face close enough just to see what looked like a hole for an ear, a slit for a mouth, and like almost nothing around the nose area. So after I see it, I pass it back to my friend. He looks, he's like, oh my God, oh my God. And then I say to him, and listen, at this point, I'm in my late 20s. I already knew a good deal about UFOs and abduction, and I read stuff. And so I tell my friend, and we're both wearing watches at the time. I haven't worn a watch in a long time. And
it's 14 hours.
Let's synchronize our watches in case we have an abduction. And we both synchronized our watches at 11:17 p.m. And next thing we know, we're both sitting in his living room, and he's sitting on the floor on the carpet, leaning up against the couch. And it was a sunken living room with one step down, and I was sitting on that one step, and we're looking at each other. And either he said or I said, weren't we just out on the porch looking at a UFO? And we agreed, and we went back out on the porch, and it was pitch black, and it was 12:40 a.m. And so we remembered that much, that we had the missing time, and it was really freaky. And eventually, that was one of the things I wrote in Bud, to Bud about in the letter. And under regression, he was able to help me remember more of what happened. And so essentially, under the regression therapy, three aliens, three grays, came through the backyard, and they don't walk. They were floating maybe 4 or 5 inches above the ground,
right,
in a line. They floated up the stairs of the deck, and there was a wood door that has a little latch on the stairway to the top of the deck. They went through it. And then we went down with them. We were in some type of Valium-induced state or whatever they do. And then the five of us in a straight line, one behind another, floated all the way back through the backyard to the ship, onto the ship. I remember, I can literally, I'm not a bad artist. I've never tried to draw the ship, but I could. And there's essentially two halves to this ship. One half was lit up brightly like a lab room with two metal tables where each of us had been laying at one point. The other half of the ship is dark, I guess, where the control This type of ship was the same ship that I remember very well from two other abductions as well. So I have a good idea of it. Before they were doing things to us on the table, which this was the only abduction I've ever had where sperm was taken, where that happened. And beforehand, we were sitting on a bench in a dark area right by where the door opens on the UFO, and we were both naked. So I remember us both sitting naked on this bench. I remember us both being on the tables of what they were doing to both of us, and being back in the house. And that's the memories from that abduction.
Well, that's an excellent description of an abduction, and I thank you for it. I'd like to, first we're going to take another break, and then when we come back, Amy, I would like you to tell us why you think you ended up living down the street from John in Key West.
Where is the unknown country? Is it out there in the stars? Or is it also somewhere else? Is it in us, in you? Unknown country, join us today. Go to unknowncountry.com right now and join us. Join the questions. Join the search. Join the adventure. Unknowncountry.com. There's no place like it in the world.
We're talking to Stephen Leah, Scott Roeder, Amy, and John, two close encounter witnesses who ended up living down the street from each other for some unknown reason. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. Scott and Stephen are both experts who will be helping us analyze a video that John made inside a UFO during an abduction experience. The first this is ever anything like this has ever been published. And maybe the only video that exists like this, as far as I know. I do know of some very clear pictures of a very clear picture of some grays standing under a tree in a neighborhood. It was shown to me by some Air Force officers in Dayton. Would not let me keep the picture. It was a photograph. This was back in the late 80s, I guess, when they showed it to me. Three or four grays standing under a tree. There's a very bright chalk-like white light shining down on the tree, and you can see it's in a neighborhood, a typical American suburban neighborhood somewhere. And so that happens, and they do have clear photograph, at least one clear photograph, not in the public domain. We have been kept in the dark. Amy, simple question. Here you are, living your life. How did you end up in Key West, and especially down the street from John?
So I lived in Miami for 20 years. First of all, so John and I became friends on Facebook, like people do in this century. We actually became friends because we had a political conversation on somebody's page. So we became friends. We were friends online for a long time. I had no idea about his UFO experience at all, because he never spoke about it. He works in business and he never spoke about it. One day, about probably a year or so after we'd been a friend, he messaged me and said, I noticed that you follow a lot of UFO people. Is this something that you're interested in, or what's your experience with this? So I, just said, oh, it's something I've been interested in for a long time. He goes, well, let me tell you something. And so that's how we were friends for a long time before I even knew that he was tangentially related to this at all. So in 2020, I lost my job, like so many people did, because of COVID. So did my partner. We used to come down every vacation to Key West. We sort of look at each other probably June or July and said, we can be unemployed in Key West just as easily as we are in Miami. So we might as well be unemployed on a tropical island. So we put our house up for rent in Miami and we moved down here. So John lived I'm not even sure where he lived in Florida, but several hours away from me. About a month after I moved here, John also moved to Key West because his son was going to go to a college just down here, Key West College. So he moved down here. So suddenly, John and I were both moments from each other, and we started hanging out all the time. And I do want to say just like one funny little story. July 4th of the same year that the video was taken, so about a month after the video, John and I went to the beach down the street from my house to watch fireworks. And he had a date, so the date was with us and John's son and John's dog, and we're having a nice time watching the fireworks. John leans over and he whispers to me, he goes, "Look at those two lights over the ocean. They're UFOs." I look up, I see two totally still bright white lights that look like stars. And I'm like, okay, whatever. We're there for another hour. We watch all the fireworks. John and his son and the dog leave. The date and I sit talking for a while. We pack up our stuff. It's like, it's like 11 o'clock. Well, lo and behold, as I'm packing up, those two white lights that he had pointed up slowly just drift up into the heavens. They had been totally stationary for about 2 hours, and they just, and he knew, John knew, just sitting there, those aren't stars.
Yeah. He knew.
Mm-hmm, he knew. He just immediately, and he just said it, you know, he didn't want his date to know, you know, this crazy thing.
It's interesting.
The date was going really great, John, until we started talking about aliens. Then, well, I knew it wasn't going to happen.
And what happened to the fireworks? They just floated. I was like, well, I'll be damned. Those were, you know, by definition, something unidentified.
Scott, why don't you tell us a little bit about, you were coming in and out, your impressions of this?
Well, you know, like I said, I'm looking at this like a crime, because there is a crime being committed, a very serious felony, that if a human did this or if a government agency did this, this violates all constitutional rights, violates your will, it is obtrusive, tantamount in some situations of rape and torture and kidnapping. I mean, these are felonious assaults by these beings that are just, I don't know where they feel they get the right to do that to us.
I have wondered that ever since one of them told me on the abduction of in 1985. I said, "You have no right." And they said, "We do have a right."
Why? Yeah, what is their right? I deny them any right. I take my self-providence very seriously. And I actually have come up with a system in my mind. What would I do? Because here's the thing about it, Whitley. They're always sneaking around in the dark, right? Tiptoeing in the dark. They got their spindly arms and their spindly legs. These are just nerds that develop too much, okay? And the reason why they are they're jealous of us. They're jealous. Why? That's why they're always playing with our parts, because they don't have any parts, because they're jealous. These are nerds that overdevelop their brain. Like, you know, this is like Elon Musk and Bill Gates 1,000 years from now, and they've overdeveloped and now they want to come back and see what it's like to be alive. And I feel like that's why they're interested in us, because we are alive and they are kind of maybe not.
Well, you know, that's very, very interesting that you say that, because just a second, Amy, in The Fourth Mind, I go into that very issue of whether or not they're alive. And the ones that, and I'm just going to be lay it out on the table, that we have had some cadavers of for years that have been studied extensively. And I go into that in the book, that should never have been held secret, do not have genitals. And they do have big, complex brains, meaning that they know what they are and know what they aren't. And you may be very right about that jealousy.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why they don't come at us during the day, right? Some people look at them, why they don't come at us during the day, because they have big eyes and they're insects. And that might be true in some instances. But I think the light of day strikes the fear of God into them, because they can, you know, because during the light of day, you know, they're vulnerable. They're vulnerable.
Exactly. It's not because they're vampires and can't stand the light. It's because they're very vulnerable. They're very small and physically, very capable physically, very fast, but not very strong.
Yeah, you could punch one in the face, you'd knock him out, kill him, if you could make contact.
That's correct. You'd break him apart. And okay, now Amy, you were gonna come in.
That was a little sidetrack. Sorry, Wheeler. It's just so fun.
No, that's what we're here for. We're here to talk.
Yeah,
and we're gonna get to you, Stephen, in just a minute because we're gonna do is we're gonna show John's original video on a screen share, and then we're gonna start talking about it in just a minute. But you know, before we do that, and before we get back to Amy, let's do the last break, and folks. Why not subscribe to unknowncountry.com and keep this old guy going, because you're not hearing this anywhere else. This is my place and my time. You need to support this. And it's not that you get more as a subscriber. It's that if you don't subscribe, you're not going to get anything at all. You get everything I can give you. I'll give it to you anyway, as you know. And so you can sit back and be passive about it. You can say to yourself, I need to participate. We'll be right back. I'm going to run the video now. I'm going to try to. And if you guys have all seen the video many times, so if the share doesn't work, folks and even if the share does work, if it's not perfect, we will cut it in to the show after editing.
Holy crap. It's crazy.
Well, as Amy kind of touched on, I didn't remember this abduction. It was about 6 months later. I was sitting on my back deck going through the gallery of my phone, like many of us do, deleting pictures and videos that we don't need. And I had seen the one, screenshot of the video, and I didn't recognize it. And I played it. And what was significant is you can hear my voice on it. And the video is a little dark and a little fuzzy, and I had to watch it back a lot of times. And essentially, I figured out what it was. And I showed Amy. She said, yes, I agree. It's what you think it is. And after that, showed, other people in my friends and family. And I started reaching out to professionals, video experts. I had referrals from some people to others, and I'll be honest, I've had a few video professionals think it's a hoax, think it's a fake. And essentially, even one guy who's very well known in the UFO field, he responded to me literally within hours saying, what kind of fake are you trying to get over on me? And it's obviously a light and a ceiling fan. He even named what type of wattage the light was using and never really studied the tape, never really used any type of software or applications to investigate it. And, we have, of the few people who have called it a fake, I think only one guy actually did actual work on the video. And his final conclusion was that the video is real, but he thinks we staged it. So, which is...
Because he can't handle it. He can't face it.
No. Yeah, that we staged it. I'm too lazy to... And I don't care enough about anything like this to have staged anything. I'm not technical. I couldn't even sign into our original Zoom meeting. It took me 20 minutes.
Now, you can see now. Now, wasn't there some work done on the location and timing of the video in relation to your house?
Yeah, that's a good point. So what we've discovered, I have an Android, I have a Samsung Android. So you get there's the video details, and then you also have the metadata. And you can compare the two. And typically, from what I've been told, the two should essentially match up. So, and hopefully I'm not getting this backwards, but when you look at the video details of the video, it says that it not only does it include the GPS coordinates, but it says that the video was shot or started at 1:15 a.m. on the morning of June 12th. And as I've been told, and as typically we know, when you hit end on the video, it's immediately transferred to your gallery. Well, when we studied the metadata on the video, the video was not added to my gallery for 3 hours and 15 minutes later until about 4:30 a.m. And when the video ends after 43 seconds, I didn't end the video. Apparently and seemingly, they turned off my phone electronically somehow. Because at the very end of the video, there's a white stripe, similar to like an old Super 8 movie. That would have the white stripe at the end of a movie. And the only thing we can fathom, and there have been a bunch of people who have brainstormed on this, is that they turned the phone off, even though they allowed me to film or video for 43 seconds, and one of the aliens is arm's length from me while I'm doing it. And when they put me back in my bed or back in my home, that's when the phone turned back on, and that's when the video was then added to the gallery. And it totally makes sense.
That's because phones don't live outside of time, but aliens do.
The other thing to add to that is that the GPS of when the video was started, the GPS coordinates was 1/3 of a mile away from my home. With the metadata, when the video was added to my phone, the GPS coordinates was my home address.
But that's very, very telling, because that gets back to this idea that it was staged. It wasn't staged. What is a third of a mile from your home exactly? Where was it?
As you will see in the video, or have seen in the video, there's a flashing red light. And it's clear that the flashing red light is a cell phone tower.
Yeah.
And the craft itself, when I'm taking the video, we determine is about 110 feet in the air, about 150 feet from a cell phone tower. And that's the exact GPS coordinates of the craft itself. And as I've provided Scott extra video of different angles of the cell phone tower from my house, I've provided nighttime pictures of the cell phone tower, and they've actually been superimposed, if that's the right word, Scott. You know better than I.
Yeah, we did an overlay with it, and I can verify 100% that this video is unedited. We put it through all of our software to look for any kind of a cut or an edit. So the video is real, and unless John was able to raise Jim Henson from the grave after he died in 1990 to be there in 2022 to get his puppets, I don't see how that is going to happen. You know, there's always a terrestrial, you know, like, listen, some people say it's possible that it was a traveling band of puppeteers that were moving across the South and they just decided to do a show, but it's not probable. Okay.
Unless you're working for the Defense Department,
right,
or you have a bug in your ear about this, you're not going to go there. But incidentally, there are plenty of people in the UFO community who have unspoken DOD connections, and they are going to be debunking something like this out the wazoo, you may be sure. And they're going to be in areas like video analysis and so forth. So you'll hear from those people, no question. We have a short video, which is going to begin, as you can see, with the area that the experience took place, showing the telephone tower that was involved, and so on and so forth. And then we're going to take, just in silence, another look at the various renderings that have been done to try to see a little bit more deeply into what's there. It's very difficult to do. The video is extremely limited in terms of the amount of information on it, and you can only massage that information so much before you begin to see things that aren't there. And we've tried to avoid doing that. Our experts have obviously tried to avoid doing that. And so let's just look at the rest of it now, and then I'm going to say goodbye. Well, I would like to wish everyone a Merry Christmas again, but also now a Happy New Year, that 2025 will be a wonderful year for us all. I think a lot of people are expecting big things to happen in terms of the close encounter experience and what we know and understand about this. And I think this is indeed the year that 2025 will bring significant change. That's why I have published The Fourth Mind, when I have, right at the beginning of this year. And if you read it, you will find much in it that demystifies the grays, that talks about their brains, their minds, their spiritual life, and understanding of that, their anatomy, how they interface with their objects, and so on and so forth. And then it will go in very deeply into what happened to us. Why don't we have the same powers the grays do? Because you will see there is an extraordinary experience described in the book, which has never been talked about before. It happened as part of the Virginia case years ago, but nobody understood its significance. But it's tremendously significant. So get the Kindle. It's on at a lower price now before the rest of the material shows up, before the audiobook and the hardcover and softcover. Then it will go back to normal price. It's for $7.95 right now. It'll be $9.95 later. So get it while you can. And please read it and comment on it. Make a review if you care to. And send me any questions, as always, at whitley@streber.com. I'm right here, and I'm here for you. I'm here for you all the way through this, as long as I last. Have a wonderful 2025, and thank you for participating in the amazing journey of Unknown Country, Dreamland, and this guy.
Should old acquaintance be forgot, and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot?